Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show. Well, we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do all kinds of other stuff that you'll find interesting and possibly entertaining and perhaps even edifying. It's a big announcement this week. Big announcement. Yeah, I'm 3 weeks off Matt Drudge. I have not visited the Drudge Report. Today marks 3 solid weeks. It's really weird, too, because I've been going there pretty much daily since 1997, ever since the famed blue dress, that whole thing. But I've found many other outlets with, I don't even know if you people have noticed, because everyone else parrots Drudge's links too. So everywhere you go, they're Drudge links, or whoever's running the Drudge Report now, perhaps whoever has Matt tied up. All right, but I'm 3 weeks off the Drudge Report. And I just want to let everyone know it'll be okay. You can do it. You just have to turn it off. All right. but let's move. Still working on the whole. I'm still working on the whole allergy asthma situation. I'm on drugs now. The doctor has put me on drugs. They don't appear to be having the desired effect. At least not as quickly as I would like. So anyway. So if I'm a little wheezy and hacky and coffee and whatever, coffee, then just bear with me, okay? I'll get this thing figured out. But in the meantime, I want to start in the widespread slander file, a story from Front Page Magazine, which is not really a magazine. It's frontpagemag.com because magazines don't really exist anymore except in pistols, I suppose. Certainly no printed publications called magazines actually exist anymore, or if they do, I'm just not aware of them. Anyway, pulled down this article. Progressive activists long ago realized that the best way to bring about a revolution was not through overt attacks on the establishment, but through subversion from within its structures, in particular, its structures of education. That's right. The surest and most direct way to mold the future is to mold the impressionable young minds. And that's why people like Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn abandoned bomb making with the Weather Underground and instead earned master's degrees. Ayers became an educator. That's right. They both became respected, credentialed educators. Ayers earned 2 master's degrees in early childhood education after blowing up buildings as a left-wing terrorist. He then earned a doctorate in curriculum and instruction. Bernadine Dorn is one of the founders of the Children and Family Justice Center at Northwest University School of Law in Chicago. She's sweet, super special. But now... And so the Front Page Magazine article simply makes the point, or reinforces the truth, that the secular left took over the education of your children and mine, at least they intended to. They've taken over the education of the children for the better part of a century now, with Dorn and Ayers just putting an exclamation point at the end of the takeover. But now the secular left, according to Front Page Mag, is terrified of losing control of America's children to homeschoolers. Yes, the left, they say, is gearing up to clamp down on any increased interest in homeschooling. And this is where the slander part comes in. This coming June, if they've stopped wetting themselves in fear of the dreaded virus, and they're actually able to leave their dorms and their citadels of higher learning, Harvard Law School will be hosting an invite-only homeschooling summit to discuss the quote, problems of educational deprivation and child maltreatment that too often occur under the guise of homeschooling in a legal environment of minimal or no oversight, unquote. So their homeschooling summit will focus on the abuse, the abusive nature of homeschooling. It's sponsored by Harvard Law School's Child Advocacy Program in cooperation with the Academy on Violence and Abuse and the American Professional Society on the Abuse of Children. They sound like they abuse children professionally by their name, and I would guess, based on what I read here, that this is, they're in the business of ginning up money, whining about the abuse of children, or raising awareness of the abuse of children, and then they use that money to abuse children. Let's see, the another sponsor of this homeschooling slander summit at Harvard is the Zero Abuse Project. That's right. Anyway, note how many of the organizations focus on child abuse. That's because homeschooling parents are often demonized as abusers. Indeed. And there probably are some out there. There probably are some homeschoolers who abuse their children, just like there are some people out there, very, very few, a very tiny percentage, who will catch the COVID virus and die. There's very few. Okay, all right. So anyway, your Harvard Law School... Tech, get off my show, Harvard Law School. Meanwhile, we go. let's see. I don't know what this file name is because I've abbreviated it, and I don't understand my own abbreviation. That's always embarrassing. Anyway, it's about, this is the silver lining file. Okay. I thought it was slur language. I didn't recognize my... Anyway, the silver lining file, that's right, we're always looking for silver linings around this long, dark cloud that the secular ruling left has dragged over us all. But one bright and shining silver lining could be the final and ultimate collapse of the Chinese Communist Party. Breitbart reports that in China, over 5 million people just in the past few weeks have lost their jobs. And about 5.5 million rural Chinese already live in poverty. How do they define poverty in China? If your family lives on less than about $325 a year, you're considered to be living in poverty. Well, this economic shockwave that has gone through the Chinese economy perhaps threatens what the Breitbart reporter describes very well, by the way, as a long-held tacit agreement between people and the Communist Chinese Party. Is that how you say it? No, it's the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP. Which C goes where? The Chinese people and the Chinese Communist Party have this long-held tacit agreement that freedoms can be sacrificed in return for economic progress. And this understanding forms the basis of the authoritarian government's legitimacy. And now that economic progress is threatened. In fact, it's ground to a halt. It's stopped. And for many people, they're just out of work and going broke. And this threatens the regime from within. And I've been praying for a long time that the Communist Chinese Party would collapse under the weight of some great social event. And who knows? Perhaps we're close. Perhaps we're almost there. Perhaps this will be the event that brings it about. One other silver lining that we've noticed around the country, several of the states that have banned plastic bags at the grocery store. Why did they ban plastic bags at the grocery store? Because they're mentally deranged. It's a blatant virtue signal. I'm so good, I'm not going to put any more plastic into the fish in the ocean. Instead, I'm going to bring this filthy canvas bag to the store, and I'm going to fill it with vegetables and groceries and mix it all together. And then later, like
two or three days from now, I'm going to bring the same filthy canvas bag to the store again, along with all the bacteria and viruses that it's picked up over the past week. Well, they've banned those filthy canvas grocery bags. And I've heard that even in some states, they're not even charging you for the bags that they used to charge you to destroy the environment to buy. They're just saying, okay, we'll go back to the very clean, cheap, efficient, economically sensible plastic bags. All right, so there's another silver lining. Is that all we got from the silver lining file? Have you people noticed that everybody looks like Antifa now? You walk into the grocery store, you feel like at any moment you could be robbed or beaten, you know, or hit with a jack stand or something. It's just weird. Everybody looks like Antifa. So if Antifa holds a rally, is anybody even going to notice? No, they will. We won't notice that it's an Antifa rally until they start setting things on fire and punching people in the face. That's the only way you'll know. In a sea of Antifa. 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 I think I'd go with Antifa. Anyway, I'll return to some of that. Meanwhile, from the tough religion file, the prominent Virginia pastor named Bishop Gerald Glenn founded New Deliverance Evangelistic Church. Forgive me there, too many syllables. See, being in lockdown dulls the brain and the senses. Representative for crying out loud. Bishop Gerald Glenn, he founded a church and declared himself a bishop. Well, that's fine. He spoke about the coronavirus in his last known sermon on March 22nd. And Fox News reports that during that sermon, I'm sorry, the New York Post reports it. Fox News has obviously lifted this story from the New York Post. Bishop Gerald Glenn, in his last known sermon, said, quote, "I firmly believe that God is larger than this dreaded virus. You can quote me on that." All right. He is suspected of having violated the order in Virginia against gatherings of more than 10 people by holding a church service, maybe in secret, I don't know. Anyway, he vowed to keep his church open unless he was in jail or in the hospital. Well, he was diagnosed with COVID-19 about a week and a half ago, and he died. He died from the virus. A 66-year-old pastor who said God is larger than this dreaded virus has died of the virus, meaning that he now knows that he was absolutely correct, that God is bigger than the virus. Because guess what? Bishop Gerald Glenn, he's not worried about COVID-19 anymore. No, he's in the presence of the living God, the creator of the universe, and his son, Jesus Christ. He's reveling in the fact that God is definitely bigger than this virus. He's having the last laugh on the folks at the New York Post and at Fox News who want to try to belittle his assertion that God is bigger than the virus because the virus killed him. But what they don't realize is that the virus can only kill your body. It can't kill your spirit. It can't kill your soul. And if you're right with God, you're just up there laughing at all of us, wetting ourselves over terror, the terror of the virus. All right. Well, we don't know. He's 66 years old, which seems kind of young to die of a bad cold, but it does happen. Especially, like, if I catch this thing, I could die. Y'all be laughing at me because I've been diagnosed as an asthmatic now, allergic to rabbits. I have an underlying pulmonary issue, I guess you'd call it. Plus, I smoked for 35 years, ravaged my lungs. I put like 300,000 miles on a set of lungs that were only designed for like 75,000 miles. Basically. And so, yeah, I could catch this and die. And if you people laugh at me, then I'll just know that I'll be laughing back at you from up there. All right. God is larger than the virus, but so is people's tendency to be selfish and terrified in the face of the unknown. That's way bigger than this virus. All right. But I'll come back to that later. We dive now into the widespread panic file, which grows and grows every week. Yes, it turns out more people are worried about getting the coronavirus than are worried about financial hardship. So after spending the past 2 months diligently working to terrify everyone about this virus. The news media, the celebrities, our education system, our political leaders have succeeded in having everyone so scared they're willing to collapse the economy. So it's not just that they've been misled. That's true, I do believe. But they believe it, folks. So I and my extremely attractive audio engineer are in the distinct minority because we don't believe it's worth sacrificing the economy. We don't believe it was ever worth sacrificing daily life for fear of a virus, but the majority, they believe it. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for hanging on and for joining in with us in alleged lockdown. I call it alleged lockdown. I'm not sure how much I should say, actually, because, I've read stories of people posting things on Instagram and the police show up at their house, people being arrested because they allegedly violated the lockdown order. So I'm not sure how much I should say about what I've done or not done in response to the lockdown. I think it's probably best just to shut up about it. I think I just won't say. I'll say later. That's what I'll do. Meanwhile, we'll go to the widespread hype folder file there, where the Daily Caller reports that New York City officials have decided to add nearly 4,000 people to its death toll who they presume to have died from the virus. That increases the overall death toll in the United States by nearly 20%. They don't really give a reason why they've decided to add these presumptive deaths because they don't have to. Everybody's so scared and wetting themselves that nobody has time to ask because they're too scared. Too busy choking back fear in order to look into what these people are telling us and why all their models have collapsed. In fact, in a laughable manner, mathematically. We don't laugh about anyone who died from the virus, just like we don't laugh about anyone who died from diabetes or a heart attack or cancer. But their models are laughable and silly and stupid, and they were obviously flawed, either by accident or by design. People need to be being asked about this at this point. All right. Let's see. Several health departments in Ohio have announced that they're going to begin including people who they suspected of having the virus. Why? Because they're all embarrassed. There is a moment coming. There is a moment coming, mark my words, when all of these people are going to be asked to explain themselves. And they are working feverishly to put that moment off for as long as possible so that something else might be able to happen that could get them by. So that something, that they need another event so terrible that people actually forget about this and move on to the next one. And I'm actually worried that that's going to happen. I tell you, folks, at the end of 2018, we decided we were going to sell a house and buy a house. And I seriously, the whole time, was paranoid and almost frightened that I wasn't going to be able to pull it off before the economic collapse. That's how, and so I know it's a little silly for me to have been concerned. But folks, we pulled it off just in the nick of time. I mean the nick of time. I, that's how convinced I was that there was going to be some scheme on the part of very well positioned politicians and media figures to do whatever they could to collapse the economy before the election. That, I became convinced of that. And so I'm not a prophet or anything. I happened to guess that one right. I was wrong about Bernie Sanders. I'm not right about everything. For heaven's sake, don't take anything I say as the gospel truth, okay? You should doubt me as much as you doubt any other man. I mean, if you're looking for the gospel truth, go to Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, or Paul. Jesus Christ, not Doug McBurney, not Sean Hannity, not Rush Limbaugh, not Matt Drudge. No man. Don't go to any man. You need to doubt me as much as you doubt, as much as you doubt the death toll in New York City, now that you know that they're adding presumptive dead people. All right. Let's see. By the way, White House coronavirus, Dr. Tony Fauci is what I'm going to begin. He's been renamed as Dr. Anthony Fauci. He dismissed concerns last week over inflated coronavirus death counts as a conspiracy theory. So Fauci said it was a conspiracy theory right before New York came out and said, oh, actually, we're doing that. And so I suppose it is something of a conspiracy, as there are more than one official in the New York State government and New York City government who are conspiring to add presumptive dead people to the list of Wuhan virus victims. I suppose that is a conspiracy, but it's no longer a theory because they came out and said it, Mr. Fauci. Get off the stage. Go back to your laboratory. No, you don't have a laboratory. Go back to your office and keep pushing paper across your desk, Mr. Fauci. Get out of my life. And from Dr. Fauci, we go to the widespread panic file again. It's a never-ending deep file. The Pew Research Survey has been released from last Thursday. And Pew Research in their poll found that Americans are fearful. This poll confirms that the American people are fearful. 73% polled believe the worst is still yet to come. Okay. 66% of Americans express greater concern that governments will lift restrictions on public activity too quickly. So you know what this is evidence of? It's evidence that people are generally followers. There are very few leaders, and there are many, many followers, and that's the way it that's the way it should be. That's the way it is. That's the nature of human nature. There aren't many leaders. Most people are followers. So if our leaders would stop with the pumping up the death toll, would stop with the daily body count, would stop with the daily bamboozling us with data points, and start speaking common sense and encouragement, these numbers could turn around in a week. All the people out there who are terrified because people have been working tirelessly to terrify them would suddenly not be terrified if they were told there's no longer a need to be terrified. You can change your pants now and get back to life. I shouldn't say that. It's the governing officials, the media, the educational apparatus that is to blame for all of this sheer ridiculous foolishness. Deeper we go into the widespread panic file as we go to former Obama Labor Secretary Seth Harris. He's one of the people working tirelessly to scare you and successfully, working very successfully to scare you. I posted a simple thing up on Facebook saying that we need to look at the 1st of May as the day we bring this thing back. And I don't even want to get into how I would do it, because that's so politically incorrect at this point, I would probably be hoisted up in the town square and flayed in public like Mussolini if I were to say what I think should be done on May 1st. But can we just start opening something on May 1st, just to give us some hope? And so I posted this up, that we should start opening slowly and carefully on May 1st. People posted scary face emojis like, I couldn't believe it. And these are my friends on Facebook. They're hiding under the They're hiding under their, under their bed, terrified. Doug, how could you say that? It's just unbelievable. So former Obama Labor Secretary Seth Harris comes in to stoke the fires. He says to CNN, he says, workers are scared. Employers are not getting the help they need. If we open reopen the economy, our workplaces will be turning into killing fields. Killing fields, I say. Killing fields. Bodies stacked up like cornwood. Nobody cares. Just a hysterical, obviously ludicrous statement. Now, of course, he made it on CNN, so very few people watch, but this is every media outlet, from Fox News to everyone in the media. Even the conservatives had to march to this. All right. It's just, folks, I suppose I'll just move on. Okay, obviously, you are going to be scared until they stop scaring you. Well, I've stopped being scared. Even I bought into some of this early on. My extremely attractive audio engineer had to backhand me across the face and say, wait a minute, stop. Would you stop and just think about this for a second? Okay, so we go from the widespread panic file where former Labor Secretary Seth Harris is doing his best to spread the panic as far and wide as he possibly can. We move to what I believe will be one of the seminal articles written on this entire event, and it comes from a reporter named Alex Berenson. This is from the Widespread Hubris file. Berenson is warning of a big pivot in rhetoric from politicians and health officials regarding this whole lockdown situation. That's right. After a month of promising that within 2 weeks we'd be near collapse, they're now going to make a big pivot to the whole second wave theory. That's right. In order to justify these continued restrictions, they're going to pivot to this whole second wave. We're going to scare you because if we all go back to work, there's going to be a second wave and the bodies are going to pile up. Yeah, so I guess he tweeted this in a response to an Atlantic magazine article, Our Pandemic Summer. Right? Already laying the groundwork for this to go through the summer. The Atlantic article cited experts, who agreed. Oh, that's always scary when experts agree. It's scary these days. The Atlantic cited experts who agreed that life as most people know it cannot fully return. And the article also said, this isn't about the next couple of weeks. This is about the next 2 years. One epidemiologist said in this article published by The Atlantic that this isn't about the next 2 weeks. This is about the next 2 years. But Berenson reminds us, do we remember that the initial sell on this? And he calls it the initial sell, which I agree with. The initial sell was that we needed to flatten the curve. We had to avoid the hard spike in infections that would overwhelm the healthcare system. And okay, so that's over, right? And if you can't agree on that, then you just refuse to stop being scared, okay? You just don't want to stop. You're somehow enjoying yourself. Okay, the overwhelming and the collapse of the healthcare system did not happen, nor shall it happen. That was how they sold this to us originally, right? Remember the argument? We need to slow the spread so that the hospitals aren't overwhelmed. Okay, well that turned out to be wrong. And maybe they got it wrong. Maybe now, of course, they're going to claim. Listen to this. Berenson reminds us that the indications all point to the peak having passed by now, and now there is actually people talking openly about opening up the country. Right? We're allowed. We've gotten past the almost religious zealotry of this panic. To where now some people can actually stand up and say, well, wait a minute, maybe we could go back to work. So we've made it that far. But no, the progressives can't have that. The ruling secular left cannot have that. And the people who are potentially going to be embarrassed about this cannot have that. So the new sell is going to be the need for further restrictions because of a second wave. You see, the second wave is going to come. It's gonna wash everything away in a second wave. It's gonna be like a flood. So Berenson predicts that even as some of the more dire predictions have not come to pass, those who made them will not backtrack. No. There's clearly a dangerous political dynamic right now. He says, if we acknowledge what is clearly happening, the people who made these decisions, I think there's going to be a lot of anger at them. So they don't want to acknowledge it. So they say, oh, it's the lockdown that saved us, which I predicted about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. That's what these people are going to say. They have no choice but to say that. The lockdown saved us all. Well, Berenson concludes, it seems increasingly clear it seems increasingly clear the people who have been so terribly hysterically wrong about this, more wrong by the day, are not going to admit their mistakes, much less ask for forgiveness. They're just going to yell, the lockdown worked. View. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. Folks, I watched a show, and I missed this last week. I wanted to bring this up last week because we're skipping around on the TV in between commercials because the DVR had run out of time. So we're back to live TV, which is just terrible when that happens. You know how that feels. So we bumped on over to MSNBC, which we don't do very often. And there was Brian Williams. He hosts a show. I think it's called The 13th Floor, something like that. Brian Williams. And he was interviewing James Carville about, I don't really know what the interview was about, actually. I don't remember what Carville was talking about. What was Carville yelling about and talking about and throwing that New Orleans accent on? I don't remember. I don't remember what it was about. Now, because it's been a week now, and like I said, this alleged lockdown dulls the senses somewhat. But anyway, that's it. James said, everyone I've spoken to knows someone who was sick or hopefully recently recovered or on a ventilator or has died of this. That's what he said. Everyone. I'm like, James, what crowd are you running with, dude? I mean, are you just hanging out in the ER in Manhattan or in Queens, I think, is the worst? Maybe that's all he hangs out with, is at the ER in Queens. All right, because I don't know anyone who knows anyone who's gotten this. I know some people who think they might have had it. Heck, I think I might have had it back in late December. I'm going to go get tested, find out. Anyway, I don't know anyone who knows anyone who's, but maybe you do, and if you do, I'm very sorry for you. I do know someone who had a heart attack recently, but that didn't make the news. Nobody seems to care. All right, but anyway, so the 13th floor with Brian Williams. Carville says everyone he knows someone who knows. Jim, celebrities don't count, okay? You can't count the guy who died who everybody knew because he was a celebrity. There's been a few of those. But that doesn't count as you actually knowing someone, James. Well, actually, James is a celebrity. He might know some celebrity. I don't actually know any of these people. Anyway, Carville, he didn't look like he tested positive for COVID-19. That poor fellow looked like he tested positive for HIV. Man, what's happened to him? So I tell you what, there's a certain age where you just want, you need to stop losing weight because you're scaring us, Jimmy. Man, dude looks really bad. But I, so as these, as people have been able to slowly, slowly crack the closet door open and begin to whisper about maybe stopping the lockdown and going back to work, since that, since we started that, we've made it to that level. I and some of my friends on Facebook have talked about how would it look like, what would it look like for people to resist or to rebel against this tyrannical event? What would it look like? And I think we're starting to see people are getting in their cars, they're driving to the state house, and they're just saying, hey, let us go back to work. They're making signs, right? That's the way we've always done it. And we don't pick up guns and go and start blowing the heads off of our leaders like they do in some third world. Well, actually, we did do that when we first started this whole thing. But anyway, that's not what we're going to do this time, folks. We do not need a revolution with guns. No, we don't need guns. A few testes is all we need. That's all. Just a few. And some humility. Serious humility, folks. We need to all be willing to admit that we were duped. We're duped by a bunch of devious, ambitious, lying thieves and murderers. They duped us. The lockdown, this whole idea of locking down was so well marketed with all their false models. And folks, like a cult-like daily appeal to the experts. Almost like a cult. The Fauci and the Birx, whatever. I mean, they're like the high priests of the Temple of Syrinx every day. We have to go to them with our hat in our hand and ask them, what should we think? I mean, it was seriously like a cult. Really weird. If you left your house during the lockdown, the vast majority of your neighbors, it was akin to treason at the Battle of Yorktown. You might have even thought of yourself as Benedict Arnold as you went to the store to get some ice cream. I mean, between the daily body count and the projections of overwhelmed hospitals and ventilators and corpses piling up outside the ICU, I think all of us became somewhat dazzled and bamboozled by the data. So bamboozled were we that our collective vision was blurred. All while we were being, while we were being entertained in a macabre kind of way. This would be our World War II movie. You know, I'm convinced that all of us, to one level or another, have an egotistical desire to be in a movie. Or to put it more in more realistic terms, to be a part of some great socially important event that we can brag about later to people who weren't there. We all have that tendency. And so we can be exploited. That tendency can be exploited by those who can construct the appearance of such things, which is what we have here, folks. A construct that took advantage of our nature to want to be big and important. And that caused us to lose sight of godly common sense. Just godly common sense. I really appreciated when my pastor did a sermon on the book of Leviticus and how the idea of controlling infectious disease was already described by God through Moses 4,000 years ago. 4,000? 3,000. Many, many, many millennia ago. All these ideas of how to control infectious disease were described in the Bible. But folks, the book of Leviticus never said throw off civilization and collapse everything and go hide and freak out and panic, which is what we've done here. We've lost sight of just godly common sense. And I believe that history will judge that this is what's happening right now. This will be studied by the social scientists for the rest of human history because of the enormity of the colossal events that collapsed the whole world for at least a month and a half. And we'll see how long. But that's my take on it. That's all. Just one man's opinion. Don't take it as the gospel truth. But just consider it as a point worth considering. Just like whatever you tell me, I'll consider that as a point worth considering. All right. Because we are all in this together. So, and then we go now to the widespread cowardice file. And by the way, this is... Before I go to the widespread cowardice file, since the word cowardice comes up because it's the name of the file, so I believe that cowardice will be the theme. When historians document what happened here, it will be cowardice and the whole dynamic of the panic in a crowd. Cowardice at the very top. Both sides of the aisle. Now, onto the widespread cowardice file, we go to the Michigan, where Governor Gretchen basically outlawed elective surgery. She outlawed knee replacement, hip replacement. She outlawed getting your back surgery so you get out of pain. She outlawed foot surgery so that people could get up out of wheelchairs. She outlawed all of those. She made it a crime to go and get an elective surgery. You can't go get your tooth pulled, and Gretchen Whitmer doesn't care how much it hurts. But when it comes to abortion, she's kept the abortion mills open. She's kept the baby-killing clinics open. Some people, she says, tried to say that that type of procedure is considered the same, you know, like as knee surgery, elective surgery. She says, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. You notice that she couldn't even use the word abortion. She says, some people have tried to say that type of procedure. She couldn't even say the word abortion. And by the way, abortion itself is a euphemism. Abortion is a word that baby killers came up to avoid saying killing the baby. Because the term abortion refers to an event that's not initiated by people. It's a bad outcome in a fallen world. It's a bad outcome to a pregnancy. It's an abortion, and it doesn't involve a doctor with instruments or pills killing the baby. That's killing the baby. That's different. But the term abortion has worked its way into our collective vernacular as a euphemism, and she can't even use the euphemism to describe what she's talking about. Because somewhere deep down in her black little heart, she knows that this is evil. But what does she say about killing babies? She says, a woman's ability to decide is not an election. It is a fundamental to her life. It is life-sustaining. Killing the baby is life-sustaining, says Gretchen Whitmer. Are we surprised? I mean, the people of Michigan who elected this baby-killing, homosexualist, leftist communist, they know exactly who she is. They knew who she was. The Washington Examiner article goes on to begin describing the operation gridlock, which is people just getting in their cars and driving up to the state house and saying, please, can we get back to work? So what Gretchen Whitmer is about to find out is that the vast majority of people in Michigan did not vote for her. No, she was elected by a bunch of people in Detroit and the other urban centers who need her welfare and like her socialism. The vast majority of people in Michigan, they don't want this. And they don't want her. She was elected by a political machine. She does not represent the majority of the people in the state of Michigan, and they're about to let her know that. And that's all well and good. That's all well and good. But you know what? The hypocrisy on both sides in this event. That's events like this tend to expose the weakness on all sides, in every man and every woman. Because listen to this. Several sheriffs in Michigan have responded positively to Operation Gridlock and have announced that they're going to refuse to enforce Governor Whitmer's executive orders on lockdown. So now the sheriffs are willing to stand up and resist a tyrannical government, but not one of these sheriffs ever blocked the entrance to an abortion clinic, ever. Not once. Not to try to save one person. For 50 years, they've allowed the slaughter to continue. But now that they're locked in their house for a few weeks and they're getting antsy, now they're willing to stand up and they're willing to say something. Well, I'm all for standing up and saying something, but we need to say something about everything that these tyrants are doing to us. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Almost couldn't come back from that one. I was like, man. All right. So I just said what they're doing to us in reference to a story about them killing babies. That's because the babies are part of us, and I'm a part of them, and they're a part of me, and we're all a part of the same family of man. So just like when I include myself in the group of people who've been duped and bamboozled by nakedly ambitious liars, thieves, and murderers. I include myself in that. I use the term us. It's the collective. We're all in this together. And so when they kill babies, they're doing it to us. But more specifically, where they are doing it to them, a living person, taking the life of an innocent living person. And that should not be overlooked. And it's about time some sheriff strapped on a couple of testes and actually stood up. That's all I'm asking. All right. Meanwhile, in the justice file, Florida has released over 100 prisoners that we know of because they might get sick in a jail and nobody wants to get sued. I'm sure that's the bottom line is so much of this panic has been driven by fear of litigation. Fear of litigation was probably one of the main drivers that launched this whole hysterical freak out. Well, Florida has been releasing prisoners regularly, at least 100 that we know of, to slow the spread of coronavirus. If you don't want to slow the spread, you're a murderer. That's basically the attitude that I've felt it, I've seen it, I've read about it. I've sensed it when I walked into stores without a mask, which I do. If I don't have to wear that thing, I'm not wearing that thing. I have a hard time breathing as it is. You can put a mask on me, I might pass out in the vegetable aisle. Crying out loud, wearing a mask. But anyway, they treat you like a murderer. They give you the stink eye. Stink eye. Right? You stink eye looking at the Cheerios. You don't have a mask on. They look at you like you're spitting on everything. You're a murderer. Well, Florida's been releasing prisoners into the general population, into the population for a better part of 6 weeks. And one of the prisoners freed last month to help slow the spread has been taken into custody in connection with a murder one day after he was released. I'm not going to say his name, but he's been linked to a shooting death in Hillsborough County, Florida. That's southeast of Tampa. He had been in jail on drug charges, so he was released because he's nonviolent. And then he murdered someone. So this guy actually is a murderer, whether he wears a mask or not, whether he violates the quarantine to go get a fudgesicle or a donut. And by the way, this nonviolent fellow, he's been arrested 35 times. Burglary, possession of a firearm, long list of offenses. And now he's actually murdered someone as opposed to just violating the lockdown. An actual murder. One more life of an innocent person for whom these politicians will have to answer. So the people who, number one, didn't execute this guy for his past 35, they should have executed him after about the third arrest for contempt of court. That's when he should have been executed. So all the people who allowed him to live and then the people who just released him who are directly have the blood of this innocent victim on their hands, they will have to answer for all this. Maybe in this life, maybe. Guaranteed in the next life. Guaranteed. All right. We move now into the widespread hypocrisy file, also known as the politics file. That's the former name of it. Now it's widespread hypocrisy. Where we go to one senator, Ted Cruz, who I suppose I've heard of him now. Barely know the guy. Here's what Ted Cruz tweeted, because that's what we do now. It's a thread of tweets that replaces intellectual conversation and discussions anymore. No longer will we write books. We'll just issue out a thread of tweets. And maybe that's fine. He says, today, the National Institutes of Health confirmed to me $76,000 U.S. taxpayer dollars in fiscal year 2019 went to one of the Chinese virology labs in Wuhan. I'm outraged, says Ted Cruz. I'm outraged, I tell you. How could we be giving taxpayer dollars to the same virology laboratory where that virus may have escaped from? How dare they? How dare you? How dare we do that? Uh-huh. Yeah. And then he went on a podcast, which I'm all for podcasts. That's pretty cool. Instead of having to flim-flam your way onto the radio and sell cheese and pills, whatever they huckster on there. Sheets, pillows. Instead of having to do that, you just plug in your computer to a mixing board and you go on the air. And then if people like you, they listen to you. Right? And if they don't, well, you don't care because you don't really have to report to anybody. You could just do this just to vent your own frustration, which is pretty much why I started doing this. Anyway, Cruz then went on a podcast where he said it was part of an overall $3.7 million funding program that went to 6 years in sites in Canada. I'm sorry, did I say Canada? I meant China, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Myanmar. And some of them countries might be the same country. I might have gotten confused on that. So here's Ted Cruz on Twitter and on a podcast venting his his righteous indignation against taxpayer dollars going to the virology lab where it's quite possible this virus escaped. But what Ted left out was that on February 9th, 2018, Ted Cruz voted for the two-year budget that I have to assume approved all this. This is all in the yearly budget that Ted Cruz votes for every year. Once in a while, he votes against them. And he voted for it. He voted against it before he voted for it. And I went back and looked at his record, but he ended up voting for it. So Ted voted for it, but now how dare we? I'm absolutely shocked and condemned. All right. Thanks a lot, Ted. Tell your story walking, buddy. I'm a lawyer, you know. All right. Now, we go now to the widespread cover-up file. Now, I mentioned earlier an article that I believe will be one of the seminal analyses, the big pivot article that Fox News lifted from the New York Post, the interview with Alex Berenson, who I don't really know anything about Berenson. He used to work for the New York Times, so I can assume that he's evil and corrupt and wicked and a liar and generally a leftist. That's what I assume. I don't know. But this next story, history may one day look back to this as the reason the other happened. And this is the cover-up of the attempted coup against Donald Trump by CIA Director John Brennan. This could be what the left and not just the Democrats, but the left in general, the news media, the entertainment establishment, all the people who have for the last 3 years basically tied their reputation to the idea that Donald Trump is a Russian spy. I mean, just to put it simply. They might be actually worried about this. Turns out CIA Director John Brennan is the primary focus of the Justice Department's criminal investigation of the Trump-Russia counterintelligence probe conducted by Barack Obama and his administration. Intelligence officers have testified about the production of the famous 2017 intelligence assessment on Russian intervention in the 2016 election. The document has been described as phony. Really? Okay. They say that the guy investigating this, Mr. Durham, is it John Durham, Biff Durham, Skip Durham? I'm not sure. It just says Durham. They say Durham is clearly looking at abuse of power when it comes to John Brennan, CIA director. Where the resources were the CIA illegally used to undertake domestic terrorist investigations and to falsely lead FBI officials into a scheme or to conspire with FBI officials to deny certain people their civil rights. Well, that would be a criminal act. Now, do I think that the Justice Department will ever bring criminal charges against John Brennan? I do not think that. I just don't think. The governing officials tend to forgive each other. Unless there's a really, really compelling reason not to. So I don't think that'll happen. But still, it's going to be embarrassing if charges are even brought. If charges are even suggested and taken seriously by anyone, it'll be embarrassing. Last week, Attorney General William Barr said that investigator Durham is compiling troubling evidence that goes beyond mistakes. Mistakes were what the Inspector General Horowitz issued a report on. You remember? Horowitz was the one who was going to bust this thing wide open. Wait till the Horowitz report. Horowitz said, well, they made a few mistakes. Bungling, you know. Anyway. But now Barr says, no, we're going to get to the bottom of it. Okay, I don't believe you. If people broke the law, they will be prosecuted, he said. I don't believe you. That's it. So William Barr, put up or shut up, because I ain't buying it. I'm not buying anything from you people anymore. Bunch of lying, hysterical women. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, we go now into the dim new world file, just to let you know that all insane leftist activity has not ceased in the face of reality, although most of it has. Not reading too many articles about tranny story hour. No, what do they call it? I can't remember. What are they called? They dress up in women's clothing and they wear elaborate makeup and they have a name for them. Drag queen story hour. Thank you.
Oh, those.
Yeah. You're not reading too much about those. Now that they've canceled, now that they've closed the schools, that's another silver lining. The drag queen story hours have also been put on hold, at least for a while. Actually, the Mayor Whitman there, Governor Whitman there in Michigan may make a special dispensation for drag queen story hours. Should probably find a way to do that. They could do it at the abortion clinic. But we go now into the dim world, the dim new world file, just so you know that all insane leftist activity has not ceased in the face of reality. Land O'Lakes, remember, Land O'Lakes, they produce butter, cheese, and other milk products. They have dropped the Native American maiden image from their logo, which I always thought that was a really great logo. Sticks in your mind. It's attractive. It's artistic. It kind of has that hearkening back to like the Buffalo Nickel days. I don't know, just like to the Old West and the frontier. It always had that feel to me. That's a great logo. A great logo is when you see it, you don't even have to see any words and you know exactly who it is. Well, Land O'Lakes had that for nearly 100 years. They've had the Native American maiden on their label since they were founded. And as of late, it's been called racist. Because people who are racist think everything's racist. If you see an Indian woman on a product that's being sold by a white guy from Wisconsin, that's obviously racist. Well, no, butter's racist because it's made by fat white men in Wisconsin. I'm sorry, Minnesota. Those two may be the same states. I may have got them mixed up. I apologize. Anyway, anything that's produced by white men in Minnesota, you're not allowed to culturally appropriate the lovely Indian maiden. She was good looking, too, by the way. She's a good looking woman. But anyway, it's racist. It's all kind of horrible things, of course. Cultural appropriation. So Land O'Lakes had to issue a press release announcing that they've changed their logo. But in their press release, they made no specific mention of removing the Native American image. Because that's how far down the rat hole of political correctness we are now. Is that they don't even have enough confidence in what they've been doing for the past 100 years to even acknowledge that they have to change it. They just say, here's our new logo. Look, it has some of our workers and pictures of farms and dells and fields. And isn't it nice? Uh-huh. As a farmer-owned co-op, they said in their press release, we strongly feel the need to better connect the men and women who grow our food with those who consume it. And so they put pictures of, I can't figure it out. Anyway. I guess they put pictures of the people who grow the food. I don't know. You think a picture of some dude from Minnesota is going to be as an effective of a logo as that Indian maiden? Well, that's why it's a dim new world, folks. Look forward to things being less interesting, less stimulating, less pleasurable, less fun, less of everything, folks. That's the leftist dream. Is to force us all to have less and to convince us that we need to feel good about it because we're so morally superior to what we were before, back when we were consuming all that butter and cheese. Still, no, I can't believe it's not butter at the store. This is like week 5. No, I can't believe it's not butter. Don't tell me that's not a good product that people like. All right. Less of everything, folks. Less I can't believe it's not butter, which in itself was less, because we used to have butter. So we added more words, but there's less mass. There's less calories, less salt, less of everything. But it tasted good. And we're down to like our last teaspoon here at the McBurney compound, treating that stuff like gold. It's like, don't put that on toast. How dare you? Less of everything, folks. Finally, in fact, I can go out on this because this is less, and we report on this regularly, so this is nothing new. But the marriage rate in the United Kingdom has dropped to the lowest level in recorded history. That's right. Listen to this: the rate of people getting married, and I'm talking about normal people marrying people in a normal sense. You know, back when you could just describe marriage as marriage and you didn't have to use another adjective, you didn't have to add an adjective to it, marriage was just marriage. Now you have to call it biblical marriage or traditional marriage, right? As opposed to fake, phony, baloney, homo marriage. Anyway, marriage, the rate of people getting married in the United Kingdom has dropped by 45% since 1972 and is less than half of what it was in 1940. Less than half. All right. Marriage rates are the lowest in recorded history. Religious marriage ceremonies have dropped to their lowest level in recorded history. That means normal people getting married in a church has dropped to its lowest level in recorded history. And folks, the British been recording things for a long time. I think they've been recording things in Britain for like 1,000 years. Well, the British government has placed an emphasis on women entering the workforce through their taxation schemes, they're called. This is obviously from a British author. The government wants women to enter the workforce, so they've created taxation schemes that, by accident or by design, disincentivize traditional families. And we do the same thing here in America. They do the same thing all over the democratic, leftist, Western world. Oh, and finally, folks, this event that we're all living through and we're hoping to get through could be the final clarion event that proves to anyone with a brain that democracy is a catastrophic failure. It's the worst possible way to set up a government. If the politicians hadn't been so terrified of losing an election, they would have never wet themselves and allowed all this to happen. That's what I truly believe, and it'll be up to the historians and the social scientists to prove whether or not I am correct or incorrect. But in the meantime, folks, that's it for the show. That's it. I want to thank my friends at realscienceradio.com and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.